This is the Echo Network.
Kelly's Westport Inn presents The Royalman Report with Casey Royalman.
Every new threat to the Royals likes a guy in tights coming up to her going, I love scotch!
Michael Engel.
I'm the co-host of that show. Kind of.
Jeff Herr.
Back to baseball here.
Chris Kamler.
So, Ned, tell me what you'd like to do right now. Take off my pants. You'd like to take off your pants?
Music by 49 Stones and Andre and the Giants. And now, the Royalman Report.
Holy cow, what is going on? It's Wednesday. It's not Sunday.
It'll probably be Thursday or Friday before.
It's probably Thursday or Friday before this comes out. It's not Troy Olson's voice you're hearing. It's Chris Kamler's voice. It's not Michael Engel that you're seeing on the camera. It's Jeff Herr, and it's sort of the B team of the Royalman Report. I guess the JV squad got a hold of the equipment.
If you will.
The JV squad got a hold of the equipment tonight, and we're gonna play with it a little bit. Welcome in this evening to the Royalman Report. First of all, the reason Michael Engel's not here is because he's got a big-time radio gig tonight.
He's big-timed his own show.
He is on the 810, like a real radio thing.
Yeah, a real radio station.
They have like real microphones and broadcast. I think they even have like a tower and stuff, which is cool. So he's on the 810 Hot Stove Show with Joel Goldberg, and we appreciate him inviting him on.
Joel, friend of the show.
Friend of the show, absolutely. And Troy is kind of in parts unknown. We believe he's in Denver right now, doing whatever it is that Royalmans do on their time off. So,
indeed,
we are slumming it tonight with Chris and Jeff. So please bear with us as we attempt to make podcast history, because our guest this evening is one Kansas City Star columnist, reporter, journalist extraordinaire, Kent Babb from the KC Star. Kent, hello and welcome. Greetings.
Thanks for having me.
How in the heck are you?
Really, really good.
Find the place okay?
I did, yeah. Actually, quite easy here on the beautiful and historic cul-de-sac.
A lot of folks, when they see Troost on the directions, get a little freaked out.
There's an N in front of it. It's North Troost. Completely different.
And turn around. I won't tell you what Sam Mellinger did when he approached the studio, but he was a little nervous.
Yeah, he's pretty scared of everything.
He's a scared guy, so.
He's a little skittish. What are you going to do?
He's just a flat sissy. Let's call it what it is.
It's out there.
And so the shots have begun. So
it's going to get worse before
it's
going to
get worse.
And it's always darkest before the dawn.
That's really all I needed to hear, folks. So, again, welcome into the Royalman Report. We are going to have a little chat with Kent here about some of the mess that he's made with his little newspaper column. And we'll get started here in just a few minutes. But first, what do we have first? Oh, we need to mention a couple of sponsors that we have, because, you know, hey, we're big time. We have sponsors, and not, you know, 810 sponsors, where it's not the cookie diet or not, smoke and fire or anything. But we do have two sponsors this week. Kelly's Westport Inn, of course, who is our charter sponsor, and they are phenomenal. They serve the drinks down at the Westport with the beer and the pizza and the TVs and it's March Madness is around the corner, Jeff.
Indeed.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but
I've heard of something like this.
Any place you want to watch all the basketball and the Ken, who's your basketball team?
I guess University of South Carolina, where I went to school. But
the Cox.
We don't pay much attention to basketball. That barely even matters.
Do they have a basketball team down there?
They have one. They don't have many victories. We're a football and baseball school.
Ah, yes, baseball.
They're an outstanding baseball team.
Two-time defending national champion.
Yes, sir. Yep. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Go Cox. But anyway, Kelly's Westport Inn, they're phenomenal. Also, this week, charter week for them, Maggie Moose, 72nd and North Oak. Are you familiar with Maggie Moose?
I'm very familiar with Maggie
Moose.
Dude,
Maggie Moose is the freaking bomb, if you have been up to Maggie Moose. And what is better on a January 25th evening than a big thing of Maggie Moose? What's the Maggie Moose ice cream that you like?
I usually like the chocolate peanut butter.
Peanut butter is very good. I like this.
Put some nuts in it.
I like the, gotta have the nuts.
Of course. It's
the super vanilla, and then you put the gummy bears in it.
Girlfriend loves the gummy bears. Loves them.
I knew there was something. You know what? Careful, because Engel may not be invited back if you keep winning your way to my heart, Mr. Jeff Herr. I'm gonna turn it over to you, pal, and we're gonna let you just beat up on the big journalist guy here, and I'll let you ask him some questions, and we'll see what kind of trouble we can get ourselves into. How about that?
Sounds good. Well, first we'll start with Ken. Let's get a little bit about yourself. We already talked about in South Carolina, right? Were you the question on everybody's mind has to be from hearing that at first? Were you there with Ryan Suckup?
We're a pair of proud Gamecocks, of course. We may as well have been classmates together. I covered them for the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah?
I was there during the good years and the bad and the good games and bad. I saw him miss or have blocked three field goals against Florida. I think this was in 2006. But not a great day for proud Gamecock Ryan Suckup, but it was a good game.
The Raiders game this year was just like a horrible flashback, huh?
Basically, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was a lot of the same, I think, for Ryan. But he's a good guy. You know, I've really enjoyed covering him in college now and with the Chiefs. And, we are representing the NFL in different ways from the University of South Carolina.
You know, the Chiefs have really always had a weird relationship with our kickers
that's what I hear.
And you know, we spend an awful lot of time obsessing about the kickers on our team. I don't know of any other NFL franchise. But Suckup has been outstanding. I mean, he's a good guy. So
he's got a right leg kissed by God.
Yes,
I like to say he's got a thunderbolt of a right leg.
The thunderbolt.
Yes. And what was
the thunderbolt of the right leg?
What was the name of the state? Is that what you wrote for in South Carolina?
Yep, in Columbia, South Carolina. That was my first job out of college. Got a journalism degree from the great journalism mecca, the University of South Carolina.
Indeed.
Learned an awful lot. Freelanced for the state, and then got a full-time job there where I covered high schools briefly, and then on to cover the University of South Carolina, and then over here in 2007.
You kind of talked about South Carolina, at least the university, being football, baseball. What's different about the sports climate from South Carolina to Kansas City?
We don't give a crap about basketball.
Really?
And that's the biggest thing. This is, to me, I mean, and I come from the Southeast where football is just king. I mean, it's, Mount Olympus of football. And, here I think football is important, but I think this is more of a basketball area, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of compare this to, the Raleigh-Durham area, which isn't far from where I grew up. You know, you got Duke, North Carolina, NC State. Wake Forest is not far from there. Virginia is not far from there. And here, you've got three really good basketball universities, and the football's good too. But to me, it just seems like this is a basketball area, which, I've never been as much of a basketball fan. I don't dislike basketball, but I'm just a football maniac. I've just always loved it, and that's just part of my DNA, being from the South. And so that's probably the biggest thing. And but I've certainly got an appreciation for the basketball at the level around here.
Mm-hmm. So who was before... Is South Carolina so big that pro sports, you didn't even really have to have a team? Or did you have a team before you came to Kansas City and started covering the Chiefs?
Well, South Carolina's not big. I'll go ahead and tell you that.
Football being big, I should say.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I grew up a Clemson fan, which, I'll never forgive myself for the first 17 years of my life. There's actually a really embarrassing picture of me in my senior year yearbook. I was in the bowling club, believe it or not.
Oh,
I ran for
president. I was going to actually guess. Go bowling club or maybe you played a lot of jacks at recess, I'm guessing.
I got fivesies every once in a while. But yeah, I was in the bowling club among some other less embarrassing activities. And in the picture from the bowling club, I'm wearing a Clemson hat. And the only reason I didn't go to Clemson, thankfully, is because it didn't have a journalism program. I didn't want to go and push a plow.
Wasn't because of their mascot?
Well, the greatest major program, and I'm going to offend every Clemson fan I know and who's listening to this, and that's fine because they deserve to be offended.
There really is no one listening to that, first of all. So let's start that
But
off.
The most well-known major is wheelbarrowing there. And, of course, that's not true, but I like to say that. Clemson is the enemy, and I have a sad distaste for Clemson people.
And was it Clemson that had the controversy a few years ago? I want to say early mid 2000s, where they wanted to have the Confederate flag or something raised up. Was that Clemson?
Well, that was the entire state of South Carolina.
I think that's South Carolina you're talking about.
Yeah, that was the Confederate flag.
Seeing an ESPN outside the lines on it.
Yeah, I mean it was sort of one of those stories that touched the entire everything in South Carolina, and this is certainly something that many of us are not proud of. But they used to fly the Confederate battle flag over the state house. Right beneath it was the American flag, the South Carolina state flag, and the Confederate battle flag. Mm-hmm. And about the time I was in high school, I actually gave a speech on this in a speech and debate class when I was a senior, saying it needed to come down. And thankfully it did. And that's just, we won't get into very many political debates here,
right.
But I was glad to see it come down. I mean, this isn't 1860 anymore. So anyhow, right. that was a pretty divisive issue in South Carolina, and actually kind of remains that way. So, you know, sports are not the only thing that kind of tears South Carolinians apart.
You know how I know that?
How do you know that?
There was an episode of Sports Night about that.
Ah, yes, there Sports Night.
Aaron Sorkin's the man.
Indeed, one of the most underappreciated shows.
That's really Sports how Night. I've learned most of my American history was through Sports Night and West Wing. So pretty proud of that.
By Aaron Sorkin. All right, well, I think with that, we'll hit up our first break here, and then we'll come back, and we'll start going into the Chiefs talk.
Kelly's Westport, it's the place where you buy beer. This guy came into the bar the other day and was telling me that they had friends in town and went down to that fancy bar district downtown. They went to one of those swanky no-ball cap bars and ordered a beer. Now, this wasn't one of those imported beers, wasn't even one of those microbrew deals. This bartender rang up the tab and he wanted $27 for three dadgum beers. $27 for some beers. That isn't right. That isn't fair. So he took them down to see us. We got them some nice big beers for half that price. Even had one of the ladies find a fella there. Got him some pizza. Listen, don't fall victim to those overpriced, no ball cap bars down there. You might as well take your money and throw it in the trash. Kelly's Westport, it's the place where you buy beer. Kelly's Westport Inn, tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
Big Net Minute.
Hey, remember a few years ago when the Chiefs and Royals asked us to pay about $250 million in taxes into a fund to renovate both Kauffman and Arrowhead stadiums? Yeah, that was fun, right? Well, let's see. The Royals have taken that money, remodeled the stadium, invested our farm system, brought up future All-Stars, and gotten us an All-Star game. The Chiefs? Well, they built a fancy area for rich people to fart around in and apparently blew the rest of the money at the spy shop. Hey, Scott Pioli. Let's put down the spy versus spy comic books and maybe mix in a quarterback. Instead of importing ladies to the 8th floor at the Ramada, maybe work on importing some free agents into the class of 2012. As our Truman Sports Complex neighbor, you're really embarrassing yourself. And this is from the team that just re-signed Unieski Betancourt. Lock that surveillance crap down and focus on throwing up a few victories next year. You backed into the playoffs last year, and this year, you, at one point, said Tyler Palco was your future. While the whole world was T-bowing at church, the Chiefs were busy palcoing in the toilet. Do better, Chiefs. This has been your Fake Ned Minute.
And welcome back to the Royal Man Report. I am Jeff Herr, and this is Chris Kamler. We are the
I don't have enough
B
arms.
Team.
I have too many buttons and not enough arms.
We are the B team, as we're so lovingly called. But tonight we have an A team guest, Mr. Kent Babb.
Was some nice kissing up
like,
right there.
Like
well
that?
Done.
What a sweetheart.
Like
nice job.
In our first segment, we talked a little bit about Kent's history in South Carolina, but now we're going to dig into his specialty. Let's talk about the Chiefs. First off, let's talk about 2011. Some highs, some pretty high highs, I would say, and some pretty low lows. Kent, what's your assessment of the season? What can we take from what we saw in 2011 from these Chiefs?
Certainly not a complete failure by any means. I mean, a lot of chaos, I think, a lot of turmoil, and you know that's disappointing. I think. I mean, because I think a lot of people had some high hopes, but. You know, really, I mean, I look back at where I predicted that they would do before the season. I said 8-8, and I said anything better than 8-8 is they've gone above their potential, and anything below that they've gone below. And I mean, for a while it looked like they could have maybe a 5-11 season, or you know, maybe worse. But you know, to finish 7-9, you know, the way they did, especially to beat the Packers, that was impressive. And you know, you hate to have to go through a coaching change, and I mean that can upend all the progress you've made over the last 3 years. And you know, certainly, you know, there's a lot of chaos having gone on over the last 12 months with Todd Haley and Scott Pioli kind of being at odds. But you know, I think Romeo Crennel is the best thing that came out of that year. I mean, because you know, Haley, I think, is a good coach. I think he will at some point be a good coach. I just think he was in an unwinnable situation a lot of the times, and the players therefore were in an unwinnable situation. But Crennel, to me, is one of those guys who he can calm down the entire locker room. He's a very smart and measured guy, and I don't think any of the things that got to Todd Haley will get to Romeo Crennel, and that's a very good thing for the Chiefs.
I agree, and I think that there was some people would say, you know, well, every time you have a coaching switch, you go with the opposite of, you know, we had Herm Edwards, who everyone considered a player's coach, and he was, you know, just maybe too soft on the guys, and then Todd Haley was a hard ass, and he was out there, you know, yelling and screaming and demanding all this. And then now you look at Romeo Crennel, and people say he's a player coach again, and then he's going to that. But the thing I kind of look at, and when I see this, is I look at the situation with Dwayne Bowe, where he didn't – I can't remember what game it was, but he didn't start didn't play for the first quarter or whatever, and Romeo Crennel said, well, he didn't follow protocol, so, you know, we didn't let him start. So that kind of made me think, well, you know, I mean – just because he doesn't scream and yell, does that necessarily make him a player's coach? And I can kind of see both sides, but what's your assessment? Would you consider him in that kind of player's coach more towards a Herm Edwards, or would you consider him, you know, some maybe in the middle?
Well, probably on the spectrum. I mean, I think he probably definitely leans toward the Herm Edwards player's coach type thing, and that's okay. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And to be honest, I think that was one of Todd Haley's shortcomings, is for the first year and a half or so, he had a hard time connecting with the players. And I think he got better at that, you know, and helped by the fact that they went 10-6 and won the division in 2010. But I think Romeo is going to connect with the guys right away. And as long as he doesn't lose the rope in terms of the discipline, that I think is going to be his biggest challenge. Guys like Dwayne Bowe, you know, I think it's difficult to keep guys like that in line. I mean, it's odd to call Dwayne Bowe a free spirit. I think knucklehead is probably a little bit more appropriate for him, but it's just one of those situations where you have to keep guys like that in line. You have to keep control of those guys, or else your whole locker room could fall apart. So that's going to be, I think, Romeo's biggest challenge, I think, to start this thing. But I think he's very capable. I mean, the fact that he's older and, you know, he's got a lot of experience, I think he's going to be okay.
Well, you look at Herm Edwards, who was the biggest rah-rah of rah-rah, you know, players, coaches, and Todd Haley, who was the complete opposite. Maybe Romeo's somewhere in the middle, or is a better middle ground. Even if he's kind of on the players coach side, that seems to be the way you hire coaches. You go from one side to the other, but maybe this is a more of a middle of the road. Hopefully he seems quieter. He seems more tame, but you know, should that be confused as being a players coach? I guess maybe not.
Well, I think he's got the respect of his guys, and that's big. I mean, because, you know, I think...
Oh, he sure did. They played the hell out of him.
Yeah, and I think I think players liked Herm Edwards, but I don't know how much they respected him. I mean, that's one of those things. I like Herm a lot, and, you know, I just don't know how much they respected him, and we're going to play hard for him. But, you know, I talked to Sean Smith, who played for the Chiefs in 2010. I talked to him. He played for Romeo in Cleveland. And said, you know what, I got into a fight with Brady Quinn in the locker room one day. Romeo sat me down, said, hey, you're not going to start this game. Explained to me that this is not okay. And he said, I understand that. And that made perfect sense to me. And it probably wasn't exactly what Sean Smith wanted to hear, but I think it resonated with him. And so if you can kind of find that balance and strike that chord with players and say, you know what, I'm not going to let you get away with murder, but I'm also going to give you some, you know, some leeway, I think that's a perfect thing. And I think Romeo's really skilled at that.
Yeah, and another thing going with respect is I feel, this is just my feeling, so you would obviously know a lot better than I would, but it seems from Romeo's Crennel's standpoint that the Chiefs front office maybe has a little bit more respect for him than they did Todd Haley, and maybe specifically Scott Pioli, and we're gonna get into Scott Pioli a little bit later, but I mean, do you kind of get that feeling too, that maybe Scott Pioli has a little bit more respect for Crennel than Haley, to the point where, you know, if Haley tried to check Pioli on something, then Pioli would just override him. Whereas if Crennel tries to do it, then maybe Pioli sits down and says, okay, well, maybe he's actually right.
I think it's really different on both sides, because I think with Pioli, and you know, some of this is speculation, but, You know, I think with Pioli, he's worked with him before. Romeo was considerably older than Scott Pioli, and he's been a head coach before, you know, whereas Todd Haley was a first-time coach who, you know, and a lot of times needed his hand held through some of the, you know, responsibilities of being an NFL head coach. Romeo doesn't need that. I mean, he's been around for a long time. He's 64 years old, and I think he's earned, at least in Scott Pioli and the Chiefs' eyes, I think he's earned some of this extra leeway, you know, some of this extra freedom that maybe Todd Haley didn't have. I think it was a bit of an eye-opening moment the first week where he said, you know what, I told Scott Pioli that Tyler Palco's not going to start. He didn't say he asked him. He didn't say that he, you know, talked with him first and then made the decision. He made the decision and then talked to him, and that's the way it should be. That's the way it often wasn't with Todd Haley, and that's the way the head coach has to be, and I think Pioli understands that, and that's a really good thing for the Chiefs. And, you know, regarding the offensive coordinator hire, I really think that Scott Pioli trusts Romeo to hire the right guy and is more or less just butting out, you know, whereas I think that with Todd Haley, Scott wanted his thumbprint on everything. I think that with Romeo, he trusts him to get it right, and he's going to give him the freedom to get it right.
And if I think the Chiefs are going to make anything of this window, if you call it, with this core group of players they have, I think that's a necessary part of that relationship that they're going to have. So speaking of the offensive coordinator that you mentioned, Chiefs still don't have one. I mean, what are they waiting on teams that are still playing, or maybe teams that just got done playing? You know, what do you know about that situation?
I thought it was waiting for teams that were finishing in the conference championship games. I still kind of think that. I mean, it's Wednesday now, so I mean, it's still fairly early in the process, and they could make a decision later this week. I mean, they really could, and you know, because I don't see it being one of the assistants for New England. Maybe it's somebody I'm not thinking of, but Josh McDaniels is probably not going to come here, and Bill O'Brien, the offensive coordinator, is going to Penn State to be the head coach. So unless there's a quarterback coach or a receivers coach, you know, that'd be a pretty big leap. And plus, I really think that the Chiefs are, you know, I think they should try to get away from the Patriot way. I think they need to stop this carbon copy thing. You know, I just think it's nonsense now. But I think it makes a lot of sense if you go after somebody who was with the Packers or the 49ers, one of those teams, you know, the Ravens, it makes a lot of sense if you try to bring somebody there, bring somebody on from one of those teams. But it's kind of like get on with it, you know, at this point. And I don't know what they're waiting on. I mean, this can be a pretty complicated and involved process, but you can't really move on, and it doesn't exactly help. They're at the Senior Bowl right now with no offensive coordinator again. And so that's not a good thing for the Chiefs, and they need to get somebody in that role right away.
Yeah, especially when you look at Matt Cassel, who this will be, what is this, the sixth offensive coordinator he's had in the last five years or whatever it is.
Assuming it's not Josh McDaniels, then it's six in as many years.
And new system every year, just read, you know, and that's people that say that could be why it's hampering his development. And it's just a situation where you're making the problem worse, you know, because granted, I mean, it's only been, you know, a month or so since the season's over, so you're not really losing that much time. But the longer you wait, the more it's up in the air, the more time you lose. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, maybe this isn't a good example, but, you know, look at Alex Smith in San Francisco. He finally gets in the right system this year, and they're one win away from going to the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas, you know, Matt Cassel's
one
brain
play away.
Right. I mean, Matt Cassel's brain just has to be scrambled from going, you know, from system to system to system six times. And so once they get it right, it works, and it can click right away. But, you know, they sure have been trying to make different things, many different things, click for a long time now.
Yeah. And speaking of Matt Cassel, what, I mean, I think it's pretty much a foregone conclusion at this point, unless the Chiefs try and pull something with the draft, that, I mean, Matt Cassel is going to be back next year. He's probably going to be starting game one. I mean, should the Chiefs use this opportunity, use the injury they had last year to kind of cut bait with Matt Cassel, or is that something Pioli that just doesn't have it in him to do?
It would be profoundly surprising to me if they just cut Matt Cassel. I would be stunned beyond belief if that happened, just based on the personality of the personnel department with the Chiefs. And it's possible, I guess, but just knowing the familiarity and how they favor consistency in this organization, it just wouldn't make any sense. I mean, I think if you go after a Peyton Manning, then you still have to draft somebody. It doesn't quite make sense for me to spend a ton of money for a guy who, you know, you don't know if he's healthy or not. And for the Chiefs, and Scott Pioli in particular, it doesn't exactly fit his personality to trade up and try to get a Robert Griffin, or, you know, maybe reach and try to get a Ryan Tannehill, one of those guys. So they're really in a draft black hole when it comes to the quarterback position. So I think it just makes sense, and people hate me for this, and I say it a lot, and I get bashed. But I think Matt Cassel's the guy in 2012, and you know, I think it makes a lot of sense to draft a guy and be his backup. And I don't think Ricky Stanzi has shown yet that he can be the backup and, you know, be one play away from being a starting quarterback in the NFL. But I think you draft a guy and let him learn under Matt Cassel for a year, and then if Matt Cassel still is substandard or average after one more season, say goodbye. And you don't lose anything. At least you've got presumably a viable guy who can step in there in 2013 when your window should be wide open to pursue a Super Bowl.
Right.
And this might be just the Patriot way of doing things, but every public comment that's come out of the front office has been just Matt Cassel, he walks on water, he kisses babies, he does all this stuff. And so, I mean, they would have to go back on all of that, which would make them even look worse, you know, trying to about face and do something like a Peyton Manning, or I'd love him to see him get RG3, but you know, that's just me
against type for someone like Scott Pioli. But so even with Matt Cassel coming back, you kind of alluded before how you said you thought the Chiefs would be 8-8, and they were 7-9, considering all the injuries they had and all the problems that they had throughout the season, switching coaches and whatnot. So, I mean, I think that's a good sign going into 2012 that they can still go 7-9 with all that adversity. So even with that and with Cassel starting, I mean, are the Chiefs a favorite to win the division next year?
They will be to me. And, you know, I don't know what the other teams are going to do, but with Oakland having a coaching change, with Denver – you know, I still don't think that Tim Tebow is a real NFL quarterback. I think he had a terrific year, and good for him. And, you know, I actually started kind of pulling for Tim Tebow there for a while just because it was so crazy.
That's probably another thing you don't want to say too loud.
Yeah,
for a lot of reasons.
And I've learned that.
The switchboard just broke.
But I can't hide behind the fact that I was one of the first people, I think, in America to say that Tim Tebow is pure evil. I used to joke about that on Twitter and say that I've looked into his eyes having covered the SEC, and he's pure evil. And that upsets some people, too. But the Chargers, I mean, I think their window is closed. I don't think that they're going to win any Super Bowls anytime soon. And I think they're going down. Their arrow is pointing down, if you will. And so I think it really adds up to the Chiefs. I think they could win 10 to 12 games next year if they kind of smooth out these rocky times here.
Now, I was thinking about this today. The Raiders just hired, what, the Broncos offensive coordinator?
Defensive coordinator.
Defense coordinator. Yeah, defensive. Are they still just as completely screwed up as they have been the last 10 or 15 years? Or do you think they're maybe starting to put it together?
The Raiders?
Yeah, the Raiders.
I think that they're still incredibly inconsistent. I don't know what to make of them ever. I think that they're trying to – at some point, they're going to have to just pick a coach and stick with them for more than 1 year. You cannot win in the NFL by having – I mean, we were talking about the offensive coordinator and what that does as a quarterback. That's what happens to the entire team when you bring a new head coach in there. And so just having different – Hugh Jackson was a very good coach. I mean, they had him on the verge of winning the division in his first year on a very flawed team with Carson Palmer, who, you know, hadn't played in a year. And, you know, and they fired him. And that, it's crazy to me. And they fired Tom Cable the year before. And I understand the whole Lane Kiffin situation, but they've just been flushing coaches down the toilet as fast as they possibly can. And it's just become a complete hurricane for coaches. And, you know, if it works out for them, that's great. You know, they've got some talent on that team, particularly on defense and with the running back position. But you just can't keep upending your entire organization this way and expect to have success.
How many coaches have the Chiefs had in the last 5 years?
5 years.
Three.
Okay.
Right. So maybe we're the exception that proves the rule. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go. Well, if the Chiefs are going to be the favorite next year, big part of that is hopefully – would be Dwayne Bowe, Brandon Carr. Are both of them going to be back next year? One of them's definitely going to be back because they're going to be able to use a franchise tag on one of them. And there's nobody else that's worth it besides those two. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on if they're going to use it, who are they going to use it on, and if they have to pick one, who would they pick, so on and so forth?
I think they'll both be back. I mean, I'd be pretty surprised if they're not both back. I mean, these are cornerstone players on this team. And, you know, you take a pretty monumental step back if one of them even is not back. So, to me, you know, for a lot of reasons we talked about before, it makes some sense for Dwayne Bowe to get the franchise tag because I don't know how he's going to act if he doesn't need money. You know, if he doesn't, you know, if he's got his contract and he's guaranteed, you know, $30 million or whatever. And we kind of saw what happened with Larry Johnson. I mean, he just went completely into the tank. And, you know, I don't mean to compare Dwayne Bowe to Larry Johnson. I think Dwayne Bowe is a good guy, but he's made so many dumb mistakes in his career that you have to hesitate before you remove what is a big carrot for a lot of NFL players. I mean, has he been minding his manners just to get a contract? And what happens when he gets that contract? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were some times during the 2011 season where he sort of let the discipline slip a little bit. And if I'm the Chiefs, I want to see a little bit more before I reward him with a long-term contract and just kind of hope that he's the same player he has been. So franchise him. That gives him some money. That's sort of meeting halfway, if you ask me. Brandon Carr, on the other hand, is the ideal, perfect citizen that the Chiefs have been trying to get after him. And he's whatever the right 53 is, he's got to be it.
He's a
great guy. You know, he lives here in Kansas City during the offseason. He's pulled himself from a fifth-round guy who, you know, maybe shouldn't have even made the team out of Grand Valley State all the way into being one of the better cornerbacks in the NFL. Now, does he deserve top cornerback money? I don't know. That's where I think that they're going to have to come to a bit of an agreement. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs may overpay for Brandon Carr, but who cares? They've got money to spend.
Yeah.
And if you can't pay a guy like Brandon Carr, you know, you're really missing the point.
Well, I saw on Pro Football Focus, they do those advanced stats for football, and they had, you know, a lot of different cornerback rankings, and Brandon Flowers wasn't in any of the top 10 rankings, but I saw Brandon Carr was in a lot of them. So, I mean, he's made his way to the top. The only thing that gives me pause is I kind of look at, and I don't know if Pioli was necessarily the end-all, be-all decision maker in New England. I'm still not exactly sure how that whole situation works, but it seemed like they kind of undervalued, if you will, cornerbacks, because you saw lots of Asante Samuel, they kind of let go to free agency. Randall Gay, they let go to free agency. I mean, is that something that you see from his history, and maybe does that mean that they can just let Brandon Carr go?
I don't think they're very good at scouting cornerbacks, rather, because they've drafted a corner in each of Scott Pioli's 3 years, and none of them has worked out at the corner position. They've gone Donald Washington, Javier Arenas, and Jaleel Brown, and I don't feel confident that either of them could be a number two cornerback if Brandon Carr leaves, and I feel even less confident that in a pinch that they would draft a guy who would be the next guy to complement Brandon Flowers. And so that's another reason that they got to bring Brandon Carr back. They don't have an alternative.
Yeah. Well, at that point, we'll take another break, and then we'll be back, and we'll discuss some of the interesting article that Mr. Babb wrote recently.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
No, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Libidotosis.
Yep. All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl games. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
If you missed the Rambling Morons podcast this week, you missed this.
If you didn't have a computer for a week, what did you use to masturbate with?
I don't know. How much does... I have no idea what people charge for that type of thing.
And he says, well, Cody got fired. I was like, Cody who?
Have you had sex with that chick?
No, not in fifth grade and not now, but I've, you know, tried then and I've tried recently.
No, I wasn't going to insult him once I recognized the fact that he was in this room.
How much soy sauce does it take to ruin a laptop?
Not very much.
Why don't you follow me on Twitter?
He will definitely be an asset to somebody. Did I say ass?
Que lo va mi gato me dio la semana pasada. He Cody make me to feel good.
Is he trying to sext you during this?
Hey, Cody. It's your girl Sapphire from the only strip club here in Emporia.
I love strippers. Let's just go ahead and get that out now.
Gets, seriously?
It's the Rambling Morons podcast, Sundays at ramblingmorons.com.
And I promised my grandma I wouldn't make any diarrhea jokes today.
Sorry, Grams.
Yeah.
Get
it. Hey there, welcome back to the Rambling Morons podcast. We are having a funky old time with the three whitest guys on the face of the planet. You've got Chris Kamler, you've got Jeff Herr, and you've got Kent Babb. I don't know, I'm just guessing. We're probably not going to, you know, mistaken for... I'm just going to stop right
That's
there.
That's probably the best.
Welcome back to Royal Man Report. Did I say Rambling Morons podcast earlier? I think I did. Welcome back to... I get my podcast mixed up, sorry. We're what podcast is this? Royal Man Report.
This is the Royal Man.
Is that what this one is? Okay.
That's what we're doing.
Michael Engel has gone big time, and he's on a real radio show.
Yes.
We don't know where Troy is, quite frankly. He could be gone. He could just be in flight somewhere.
Yes.
But hey, we got a real live journalist here on our couch. It's Kent Babb. So how's your last couple weeks for you been?
Interesting.
Has it been fun?
A little wacky.
So you write this little article for your little paper, and a couple of people read it.
A handful.
And
I think I heard something about this.
Who's the first person that called you when that thing hit the newsstands or hit the front porch? who was the first call that you got, or did it kind of go out in advance?
It was online Saturday night, the night before it ran in the paper, and I got calls from friends, you know, other journalist friends.
Who was the first person to call you?
I think one of my friends who I talked with, he's an editor down in Orlando, and you know, we had talked about the story and what it could be, and you know how it may be received in Kansas City, and you know he liked it, you know, and I'll spare everybody the journalism inside baseball, but you know he called me and basically congratulated me on a hell of a story, and you know certainly a talker. And at that time, we didn't know it was going to grow into this behemoth of a divisive issue and, you know, a big debate within Kansas City and beyond. But, you know, certainly an interesting story, to say the least.
Now, people have attempted to write stories. I don't mean to imply that you started out saying, well, you know, I'm going to write a piece that's just going to blow up an entire establishment. People have tried to write stories about David Glass. They've tried to write stories about... the Hunt family, you know, years ago, they've tried to write stories that maybe had some negative implications for them. But I mean, yours was pretty good. The difference is anybody who reads it online, it's documented, it's detailed, it's sourced, it just seems to be fairly well put together, and it's damning. I mean, it's damning. I've worked in really crappy environments before with crappy bosses and crappy, you know, people. And I read that and that all came flooding back to me. I was like, okay, you know, I've worked for that guy. I've worked for a guy that, you know, kind of leans
in
on
situation.
Conversations or whatever. But, you know, how did that whole process start? Did it start with a phone call? Did it start with, you know, okay, well, I've got to scrap a note here and I've got a note here and maybe I'll just follow up some phone calls. How did that, what turned out to be that article that came out a couple Sundays ago, how did that all start?
Well, it started probably back in 2009, and, you know, I didn't take any notes, but I made mental notes because I started noticing people who had worked for the Chiefs for a long time just started behaving drastically differently, and their behavior changed, and I started noticing that people just acted scared.
And 09 was significant because that's when Lamar Hunt, in that when he passed away and kind of
he passed away in 06.
Passed away in 06, but so that's when Pioli showed up, obviously.
Yes.
Okay, all right, Haley. I got you.
And Haley. So I started kind of noticing some of those things, and you know, sort of taking some mental notes, really never intending to write about them. I mean, just because a lot of times that's something that doesn't really affect the product on the field. And so I try to deal with only the things that affect the product on the field. And so I heard some things, heard some rumors, and they were backed up by some pretty influential people before the season, even before the first loss, that Todd Haley and Scott Pioli were at major odds, and that Todd Haley believed some pretty unusual things and suspected some pretty unusual things. So I started paying attention pretty closely throughout the season. I mean, just the ebbs and flows of the season and kind of how everybody responded to that, how they reacted to it. And then the day that Todd Haley approached me in the PR office and told me he thought that his cell phone was bugged, that was just a whole different situation. And from then on, it became just a hard target search, excuse me, to see what people believed. And, you know, what do you think about the work environment here? Because I'd never heard of a thing like that. I mean, that was just an extraordinary thing that he told me that day. And, you know, so I just started reaching out to current and former employees and asking them what they thought. And I kept hearing a lot of the same things, just a lot. You know, I talked to more than 24 people in all, and I heard from a huge percentage of those that this is a culture of fear and intimidation and secrecy that it's just almost impossible to succeed in.
And so when you reached out to these people and you called them on maybe their cell phones or maybe you just went up and talked, I mean, were they apprehensive like Todd Haley was? Did they think maybe their situations would be bugged? You said you heard a lot of the similar things. Was it just Todd Haley that thought something as big as a cell phone being bugged, or was that kind of...
People went out of their way when they worked for the Chiefs to make sure that nobody's listening or watching or kind of looking over their shoulder and things like that. And, you know, it was one of those situations where people altered their behavior. I mean, I used the example in the story, the people who didn't want to be seen going to lunch with people from other departments.
Which is crazy.
Well, they would leave at different times in different cars, and they'd say, well, you know, let's meet at, you know, the sandwich shop or whatever at 12:15. And, you know, that to me is unbelievable. I mean, I can't fathom working in an environment like that where you can't even go to lunch with somebody just because they don't work in the same department as you.
Every place I've been, it's always, why don't we intermingle more? You know, I mean, we're in a big company, you know, that you have... You need to have those synergies, those be able to work with other groups, other teams. That stuff's usually encouraged.
Now, you mentioned earlier that the Patriot way. Did you find any parallels with anything that was going on in New England during Pioli's regime there, or was this just, hey, I got the reins, I'm gonna run this place the way I want to run this place?
Well, I didn't look into the Patriots as closely, obviously, as I did with the Chiefs. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I looked at the Patriots a little, and it's hard to ignore where Scott Pioli's sort of upbringing comes from. And you kind of look back at the Spygate controversy and things like that. And, you know, New England is very secretive in how they deal with information. And some of that I understand it in principle. But it's a situation where in Kansas City, it was such a culture shock that people really kind of just revolted. And, you know, a lot of people left on their own. A lot of people are still not very happy. And that's kind of the way I've put it. 3 years later, people are still, who work there even now, they're still struggling to get their footing. And that's problematic, I think. That's troublesome in an organization that really depends on everybody being on the same page. And people are still struggling to kind of get it and to do what they want, because a lot of times they're just not sure what is desired of them.
Well, and the dichotomy, is from the Lamar Hunt Chiefs, which is very much a family-owned business, and it has been for the entire time that he had owned it, to such a paradigm shift to this, you know, regulated, dark gray kind of existence that these so the culture shock may have even been more for a lot of these folks, it seemed, just from reading the article.
Well, and it's a situation too, and look, a lot of that change was necessary. I mean, this was a team that back in 2008, they were coming off a 2-14 season. They were in shambles. I mean, this was an organization in shambles, one of the laughing stocks of the entire NFL. They needed a lot of change. They needed an attention to detail. But like a lot of things, you can go too far, I think. I mean, there's a line, and if you approach the line, you're holding people accountable and you're emphasizing attention to detail. But if you go over that line, you're a micromanager and you're overbearing and oppressive. And that's where you start to run people off and you scare people from coming in there. And I don't know if that's the case or not, but that was certainly a concern that was given to me from quite a few people.
So when you're sourcing this article and you're going through, and it started back in 2009, and you're starting to take these mental notes, you're starting to take some notes, you're starting to hear things not only from maybe the head coach's office, but from disgruntled employees, disgruntled current employees, disgruntled past employees. I would assume you get probably phone calls from anybody who's ever been crapped on by any club saying, hey, you know, the parking lot attendant gave me the finger when I was driving, you know, so you get some of that. Well, at what point does that become, you know, a 24 accounts and stories, and it becomes this, you know, gigantic 3-page article in the paper? I mean, at what point do you say, okay, these aren't just isolated incidents, there's something here, we need to move with this?
Well, and I made a conscious effort when I was reporting the story to, you know, and I made this point to several people, a lot of whom disagreed with the story. before and after it ran. I'll let you read between the lines, figure out who didn't like it. But if I had talked to five people and three of them told me some of these stories, then okay, you got a point. You know, and maybe it's just me searching for a story, trying to get something controversial in the paper. But we made a conscious effort to talk to as many people as we could, basically to disprove ourselves, to try to say, you know what, let's try to prove that we're not right. You know, let's try to prove that, we're not just angling for something crazy here. And one of the things that really struck me is how willing people were to talk. And, you know, I remember having a talk with my boss saying, you know what, I think I'm probably going to get hung up on a lot. I'm probably not going to get very many quotes. I'm certainly not going to get any names. And a lot of the people were more than willing to talk. I mean, I think probably 95% of the people I reached out to were more than willing to talk to me about their experience. You know, considerable number of people let me use their names. A lot of the ones who didn't, not necessarily disgruntled by any means, but, you know, this is in the NFL. If you have any interest in working in the NFL again, you don't want to make any enemies. You don't want to be blackballed. I mean, that's a real threat for a lot of these people. Plus, many of them signed confidentiality agreements. So, you know, it was an ordeal. But, you know, when we get after I factored in what the people the Chiefs put me in touch with, I talked to more than 35 people. I mean, which is a considerable number of people. And the main theme was, it was all, at the end of it, it was all believable that this could be happening, and enough people believe this that we ran this, and, you know, nobody said we're wrong yet.
And so when you approach the Chiefs about this to try and interview some, because you interviewed Mark Donovan for this, right?
Correct, yeah.
So how did you approach that situation? How did you say you want to write this article? Because you couldn't obviously say, you know, I want to write this article about Pioli bugging Haley's cell phone. You know, so how did you approach that with the Chiefs?
Well, I probably shouldn't get into a whole lot of that. I mean, just because those are kind of private conversations, mm-hmm. I guess, with the Chiefs and I. So, you know, they sort of found out about it. They sort of caught wind that I was working on a story that, and I don't know exactly what was relayed to them, but they reached out to me first. And I described it as, you know, look, you know, I'm writing a story about the work environment at the Kansas City Chiefs. And I've talked to many, many people, and they paint a pretty clear and dreary picture of having worked here. And these are the people I'd like to speak with. Some of the people I talked with, some of the people I did not get to talk with. And, you know, that's just the way that goes sometimes.
And that kind of comes into another question I had, which was, I mean, what did the Chiefs call you after this came out? You said they caught wind kind of before it actually got released. But, I mean, what was their kind of stance to it? Did they call and say, you know, don't ever ask us for any interviews again or anything?
No,
like that?
And they can't do that. And I don't expect them to. I mean, I've had a good working relationship with the Chiefs for 4 years now, and I'd like to think that that'll continue. I don't know what the reaction will be. Because I haven't heard from them. I haven't heard word one from anybody, say, in the Chiefs PR department, who is the group that I talk to the most. I've heard from other current Chiefs employees, one of whom texted me the night of and said, dead on. And, you know, that's from a current employee. So, I mean, and I've talked to a couple other people, and, you know, I haven't really, I understand it's not a story that they're going to like. And that's, I can't write stories, and the Star can't write stories just if somebody's going to like them. And, you know, this was a real thing. And, you know, that's what our job is, that we feel that we need to write the truth. And, you know, sometimes the truth is painful. But, you know, in this case, I understand the Chiefs didn't like it. But, you know, that just couldn't stand in our way.
Go ahead.
No,
sorry.
No, you're fine.
So when the article comes out, it uses phrases like, and these are quoted phrases, mental abuse, paranoia, surveillance. These are felony type, and if not felony type, then certainly, you know, workplace grievance type words and problems. Did any of these people consider going to their internal HR department or any of these things? Or were you the first one to kind of cobble together all of these stories and weave them into this story? I mean, if I'm any one of the people that are quoted in this article, I would have thought of complaining to someone inside the organization.
Well, I think, and I can't speak for him. The HR director told me that nobody came to her with these concerns, and maybe that's true. I really have no idea whether that's true or not. I just have to go by what she said.
Sure.
But one of the emphases that I kept hearing was, I don't know that they were bugging phones. I don't know if there were cameras in the walls or microphones in the walls. But what I kept hearing was, I wouldn't doubt it. You know, one of those things. And that's really what the theme of the story is. It's not really about whether they bug cell phones or whether they're listening in CIA style. It's that a lot of people who have and do work for the Chiefs believe that they're not above doing that. And to me, that's what's the most unhealthy thing about this, is because they just wouldn't put it past these guys to do a thing like that.
And furthering that point, tell me a little bit about what has happened since that article came out. And maybe your relationship with the Chiefs, with the media. We will ask you follow-up questions on that. But tell me, so you that first day it came out, you got calls from your friends and coworkers, and then tell me about the next day and the day after that. And you went on Nick Wright's show on Monday, I believe. Tell me about that entire week.
It was certainly interesting, and I had radio requests from across the country, and honestly, it seemed like a bigger story nationally. It was a huge story here in Kansas City, but in terms of the request, it was probably bigger elsewhere. I mean, I went on a bunch of different places, and I was interested and sort of even amused by what the reaction was by certain people, certain radio stations that I won't name, certain TV stations that I won't name, but I understand a lot of this. The media in this town is very corrupt, and that the sports media, I should say. And I said this before on Nick's show. A lot of us in the media have to decide which master to serve, because there are many temptations in this business. I mean, you can either serve your readers, listeners, viewers, or you can serve the very teams that you are supposed to hold accountable. And a lot of the media in this town is more interested in holding or being the master to the teams they hold accountable. And to me, that's shameful. And that's just not the way I was brought up in journalism. I don't think that's the way the people I respect have been brought up in journalism. And it's not the type of journalism that I respect at large. And if you can be bought or swayed or whatever, and I've learned that one thing, that opinions are cheap in a lot of the sports towns, not just here, but across the country. But it's a situation where if you can be talked into having a certain opinion, then your opinion is not worth very much at all.
And was this a situation where you mentioned corruption in the local media? Is that something that you had kind of noticed before, and maybe you kind of knew it was there, and this really brought it to light? Or was it something that you didn't expect that kind of reaction to come out of this whole thing, and it's really kind of opened your eyes to that?
Well, I mean, you sort of have ideas that those kind of things are there. I mean, you hear about corporate agreements and things like that, and I just don't agree with that, and I would be very troubled if my newspaper entered into a corporate agreement with any team that we cover and are supposed to hold accountable, or any corporation, or, say the police department. I mean, if we had a sponsorship deal with the KC Fire Department, that would be a conflict of interest, if you ask me. And, I'm not trying to say that, newspapers, journalism integrity is any higher. It's just different. And I understand it, and that's just the way it is. But this did bring it to light, and this did sort of galvanize that to me, that some of the suspicions I had could be true. And it's disappointing on a couple of levels, one of which is this is a pretty major story in Kansas City, and for some of the people in Kansas City to just ignore it, that's fine, that's their prerogative, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you have a big story to talk about and you just sort of turn a blind eye.
Well, one of the tweets you sent out on the 20th was, and I quote, sir, to sound all official, which we're not, recorded an appearance with a local TV station today. Hour later, reporter called, said Chiefs caught wind, called station, now spot won't air. You have refused in other media outlets to name the television station. Would you like to do so here?
I will abstain if my editors decide or ask me to name the station. And the thing is, I mean, this isn't a directive or anything like that. I've got friends at this TV station, and I just don't feel it's appropriate to kind of throw them under the bus. I mean, again, they've all got a job to do, and I don't think that it was an easy decision I can have my own opinion on it, but, I'd just rather not say who it is. I mean, it is a TV station in Kansas City that I recorded a spot with on Friday. And I'm told the Chiefs.
You recorded a spot. See, a spot. Was it on the spot?
Ooh. This deductive reasoning over here.
Sorry, kids.
Sherlock fake Ned over
there. Hey,
there
you are. That's, they don't call me idiot for anything.
But, I mean, I got the call, and they said that we're not going to run the segment.
So how does that happen? So the sports editor at the TV station gets a call from someone sitting behind a chair,
draped in darkness. He's petting a cat.
You will not run the station. You will not run the Kebab article.
It's Dr. Claw?
It's Dr. Claw!
Go, go, Gadget.
What is that? I mean, and so how much better do you feel about your story knowing that somebody can get to those types of media personalities? Does that not just lend tremendous validity to all of these other people who are saying, oh, this place is, you know, it's a circus and it's a dark place. Right?
I can't comment or speculate on what the chief's reasoning is. I think it's unusual that they would have a problem with this. And the irony is I didn't even really talk a whole lot about that story. You know, I came in and the reporter asked me about the offensive coordinator search and the quarterback.
Maybe that was the Chiefs that just called him. I should probably call him back.
I tell you what, I certainly wouldn't tweet anything that you had me on before it actually posts. But, you know, and I know for a fact, and I've heard this afterward, but and this is coming from people that I trust, that the Chiefs put in calls to, you know, certain radio stations, certain reporters, and asked them to have a certain opinion. And again, I mean, that's kind of what I talked about before. If your opinion can be bought that easily, that's corrupt. I mean, that's corrupt. And, you know, that's just the way I look at it. And maybe I don't have the friends I have in the media, but that's okay. I didn't exactly get into this business.
Well,
friends.
I mean, this has started a tremendous firestorm. I mean, I know Nick Wright and Bob Fesco were going at each other in there. That's an internal station. They were all throwing grenades over to 810 because of their contract relationship with the Chiefs. You know, and then 610's no different because they have the same type of relationship with the Royals, yeah. You know, if this were just the Royals, you kind of get the impression that the shoe would be on the other foot and they'd just do the same thing.
Or KU too. They have the same,
KU, exactly. But the Chiefs seem to be the 10,000 pound gorilla in this, in that they are just so heavy handed in all of their dealings. And going back through that article, which is massive. I mean, and if you haven't gone out and read it, please do, because Kent may not be with us much longer, and that article may be stricken from the website. But I mean, what's next? I mean, what on earth? What happens when you go back to One Arrowhead Drive? I mean, have you been back out there since the article has posted?
Not yet, but I haven't had a reason to. Right. But I mean, the next chance I get, I'm not going to hesitate to go out there. The Chiefs don't tell the Kansas City Star who to cover or who is allowed to cover the team, and you know, as far as I know, I'm still the Chiefs beat writer along with Adam Teicher, and I'm planning accordingly. And so the next thing that the Chiefs have, or next event, or next press conference, you know, I will be out there with. You know, I certainly wouldn't hold any grudges, and I would hope that the Chiefs wouldn't hold any grudges. I have no grudge to hold, but you know, I'm going to go about my business professionally. And as a professional, I will expect the same from the Chiefs.
And now, outside of the local perspective, let's talk nationally. You mentioned you got a lot of pub nationally for this story. So first, just something that I was kind of curious about. Did the NFL contact you at all after this? Just because I know they issued a statement about how nothing had been brought to them officially. Did they contact you at all?
I contacted them after the fact. Okay. And I got the same statement everybody got.
Okay. But then from the national perspective, I know I'd heard Jim Trotter from Sports Illustrated on, I believe it was a Nick Wright show, that he mentioned something before the article even came out about, you know, rumors that he had heard. When you were talking to other national media, you know, before the article came out and then afterwards, I mean, how is this just pretty much people were just like, oh, yeah, you know, I've been hearing that? Or how many people were shocked versus how many people saw this coming? And what do you think that? How do you think that hurts or what are the perception of the Chiefs on a national level?
I think a lot of people in the NFL, and I don't mean just the media, but just in the NFL inner circle, this is not news to them, really. I mean, and I've heard from people since it ran who have been acquainted with the NFL for decades saying, yeah, this is sort of a poorly kept secret. This is the way it was. So, you know, and you can look at that from a couple of different levels. On one hand, you know, I think it was a big shock for readers in Kansas City and for people who, you know, and I get this. I mean, I'm this way with South Carolina, you know, the University of South Carolina. I'd like to think they do no wrong. I'd like to think that they recruit the way they're supposed to and they coach and, you know, do all the things on the up and up. but I know that's not true, you know, and that's disappointing in 2012 American sports, but that's just part of the culture and part of the competitiveness. And we have to keep in mind that in the NFL, these are, in a lot of cases, billion-dollar corporations, and I emphasize corporation there. And that's disappointing, I think, for a lot of people to have to think about that. I think we all know it, but to have to think about that and just see it in print, that's difficult. But it wasn't a huge surprise for media and people who work in the NFL, people who observe or are ingrained in the NFL culture. This wasn't a huge shock, you know, but for the people, I think, who aren't all that acquainted with it, who just sort of casually observe this league, I think it was a pretty big shock.
Mm-hmm. And for the readers that are in Kansas City, that it was such a big shock to them. Sometimes I wonder if, and we kind of talked about this earlier, you know, everyone's like, oh, the you know, bugging of the rooms and the cell phones and all that stuff. And, you know, whether it's true or not, you know, if it's true, that's definitely bad. But on some level, are some of the readers maybe missing the point if they're focusing on that too much? You know, because a lot of what I took from the article was more along the lines of, you know, the candy bar wrapper, which we haven't even talked about, how, you know, Pioli picked it up and gave it to Mark Donovan, and he put it in an envelope and brought it up at a manager's meeting and all this, and kind of an ambush, if you will. You know, and it's like, you know, the point that I just struggled with was, why is Pioli spending his time on anything, any sort of this minutia, when we have a substandard product on the football field? You know, is that kind of what we missed in some of this?
I think that's one of the main points of that story is, and I can't answer it. I mean, I think this is one of those situations where I have to let the readers decide and the Chiefs fans and people like that decide what they think. I mean, but yeah, I think it's a legitimate question. If this is what is occupying the general manager of an NFL team's time, then is this time that he could have spent looking at draft picks, or time that he could have spent scouting free agents? And I don't expect Scott Pioli or any other executive in the NFL to spend all of his time doing this, but this seems to be, at least based on the accounts that I heard, a considerable amount of this man's time. And, you know, if that's the way he thinks he's got to go about his business, okay. But the fact that there have been two losing seasons out of three, to me, is what really kind of kicks this thing over the top. And so if these guys made the playoffs two out of 3 years, or if they had three winning seasons, or even two winning seasons, I think it was still a story, but certainly not to this level. And I think it's a very legitimate question that in 3 years, and there have been 27 losses, 28 and counting the playoff game, if there have been that many, and there's all these other little things that these people, these high-up people that are paid enormous amounts of money, this is how they're spending their time, I think that should raise some eyebrows.
Now, the last kerfuffle that I – it's a word. You can look it up. It's not a South Carolina word, but it's not. North of the river word. The last kerfuffle, I guess, that really happened with media around here would be like the Bob Fesco, and I forget the gal, Rhonda Moss. When Bob Fesco was at 810 and Rhonda Moss was at 610, they asked a question of the media in the media room at the Royals, and got their credentials pulled. You haven't seen, at least at this point, any sort of credential. I mean, I don't know how you guys are credentialed or how frequently you're credentialed. I assume the Star would get a handful of credentials. You, Teicher, Mellinger, you know, whoever. But you haven't seen anything out of that, or any retribution or anything.
No, and again, I mean, I would hope that's not on the Chiefs' radar. I mean, I would hope that at this point, and it's up to them on how they proceed with this, and, you know, with this information and the fact that people believe this, even the people who are still working under the roof. You know, whether it's true or not, they should probably take stock. You know, they should say, you know what, if this many people think this, we should maybe have a meeting and say, all right, how do we smooth this out? And I've heard a lot of people say, you know, does Clark Hunt really know what's going on with the Chiefs? I mean, he lives in Dallas. You know, you just don't know. And so, again, I mean, I think these are all little circumstances that sort of build into a lot of the belief regarding not only the story, but this organization as a whole. And it's just an interesting and very unusual dynamic that the Chiefs have. And as far as I'm concerned, as far as it relates to me, I certainly don't expect any retribution, but, you know, or anything like that, or credentials. And, you know, again, I mean, I'm going to behave like a professional. I've done this all along. And, you know, I don't think that me asking questions or writing a story that just because the Chiefs don't like it, they should take my credential. I think that would be kind of confirming everything that people have said.
Do you get contacted by any of the
previous big names at the Star, like Whitlock or Poznanski, or I mean, you don't have to tell me if you did. But,
I heard from a couple of people. Okay. I won't say who exactly. And again, I sound like Todd Haley when I'm answering these questions.
I'm not going to tell you who the starting quarterback is.
I can appreciate the question.
I just got one more question about the corruption of the local media that you mentioned. You know, it started out as this business relationship, and this is just me. This is just dumb old me kind of going off of my brain. But at one point in time, there was this fight for who could broadcast the press conferences at 2 o'clock, the Tuesday press conferences. And so at one point in time, one of the radio stations made this business arrangement where they could get access, and then they shut the other radio station out. And then the other radio station got this other access, and it just became this kind of war of who could get this business control access to broadcast from that room live. And it was a bit of a snit and whatever. But then that's turned into, after several years of this business relationship, where now you have, you know, partnerships and we are your maybe even your media arm of your organization. And it does that happen in other NFL towns that you know of, or how ugly is this getting at this point? Do you think this is, I'm going to fax you over a press release, I need you to read it type of thing?
Well, this is the first NFL city that I've worked in. So I would imagine where there are a lot of media outlets, there's probably, media and being in journalism is a game of one-upsmanship, whether that means, you know, breaking stories, or if that means, you know, running press conferences live on the radio, things like that. It's all, what do I have that you don't? And when can I get it out there and you can't? Things like that. So, you know, there's sort of a fine line on what's all in the game versus what's going too far. And here in particular, I think the majority of the sports media here sort of does what the teams tell them to do. And, you know, if that's the way the business is done, okay. But, you know, I wouldn't advise any young journalist to do that. And I'm probably not the, you know, best mentor in the world for a young journalist, but I would certainly, you know, I just believe fundamentally that you have to keep these teams, these players, coaches, whatever, at arm's length, or else you can't objectively report on them. And, you know, it doesn't matter which medium you're in. I just believe that. And if a source or somebody calls you, and this has happened to me a bunch, where somebody says, hey, I need you to not write this and do me a favor, you know, I think you have to take stock of that and say, is this the right thing to do? And sometimes maybe it is, but in this case, I think that the fact that the majority of the media in Kansas City, sports media in Kansas City, is sort of beholden to a certain sports team or several sports team, to me, it's just very troubling.
Well, that's what they taught us in podcasting school. I'm sure that's what they teach at the South Carolina School of Journalism.
We both
got our
masters in podcasting.
Podcasting
in case
masters.
From this impressive setup, you didn't get that.
I saw the diplomas when I was walking in here. They're very
that's
impressive.
My 9-year-old kid. That's his stuff. I have one more question. This is I asked a couple of buddies of mine if they could provide me any questions, and this is from Ivan Foley, who's the editor of the Platte County Landmark, another esteemed written newspaper here in town, which nobody's ever heard of, but that's okay. He wants to know if you've ever thrown a candy wrapper on the floor on the stairwell of Arrowhead, and what type of candy wrapper it was.
I don't know what type of candy wrapper it is. I've been in said stairwell. I've only been in there a couple of times. And it's a back stairwell.
I wouldn't go into it anymore.
But I have never dropped any candy wrappers back there, I'm proud to say.
And he has a follow-up question. In what order will now the buffet line, will it be Fesco Mellinger Bab, or is it Bab? Are you sandwiched in between Fesco and Mellinger?
I hope not. I don't really want to be near Mellinger at all. But
haven't even gotten into that.
I know. I try to steer clear of the buffet line a lot of the times anyway. That's a recipe for disaster to start eating the media buffet. It's very tempting. It's a wonderful temptress, but it'll get you in a whole lot of trouble in a lot of ways.
I've heard Petro talk on and on and on about the buffet at the press box at Kauffman, and how it used to be free, and then now they make you pay. And he's just like, I just bring my lunch. Screw it. I don't want to be that guy that, you know, eats all that stuff.
Whatever. To each their own, I suppose. Right?
You get the last question, sir.
So, well, I think we pretty much all got. I think we're ready to go to break here.
All right, man. We'll go to break.
You have time to come back for another short segment,
yeah,
and then we'll
do
it out of here. All right. So we are. You ready? You ready?
There's the music. Holy crap!
He's ready.
High quality operation.
So we'll be back on the other side.
We'll be right back.
We're excited to have an exclusive interview with the new iPhone 4 assistant, Siri. Hello, Siri. How are you doing today?
Thank you. It's nice for me to be here.
Siri, you've been pretty busy with the new iPhone launch. What do you do for fun?
It's just been crazy around here. I've been looking for a place to get away and wind down, but I have not been able to find anything my style on the plaza.
Have you tried Kelly's Westport Inn?
I show Kelly's Westport Inn to be at the corner of Westport Road and Pennsylvania Avenue.
It's got way more than that. It's been voted by The Pitch as one of the best places to meet guys in Kansas City. It's got a great laid-back vibe, plenty of TVs to watch sports, an awesome pizza place in the back, and plenty of drink specials during the week.
You say it's a nice place to meet guys? Accessing. This sounds like the place for me. Shutting down now.
You can't shut down. If you want to meet Siri and other great Kansas Cityans, check out Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road in beautiful, laid-back Westport. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
Gonna grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
No, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Libidotosis.
All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl games. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back to the Royal Man Report for our last segment here.
It's
with
a really depressing
Ken.
Song. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I'm used to it. It's okay. Anytime I bring them back from the break, it's always some sort of depressing song. But anyway, back here with our last segment with Kent Babb. We're going to make this a pretty quick one here. So obviously, last week we had the AFC-NFC Championship games. Super Bowl coming up, not this weekend. The what I've always thought to be
no, it's the Pro Bowl. Yeah, man. It's a huge CTV.
A huge game. The Pro
huge,
Bowl.
Huge game.
That's the big one.
There it is. But the Super Bowl, can we even say that? Am I allowed to say that on podcast? I'm
yes,
not sure.
Please.
But, okay.
If we haven't been taken off the air for the segment before, I think we can go and say Super Bowl.
I think
Super
we can
Bowl.
Go to the Super Bowl. All right. Well, the Super Bowl will be in 2 weeks. Who do you got, Kent? What do you think?
I'm going Patriots. I think this is where Tom Brady becomes the best quarterback maybe of all time with 4 Super Bowl rings. It becomes kind of hard to argue at that point. And I don't know. I think the Giants have been kind of a fluky team, and I was kind of rooting for the 49ers. I kind of like them, but I'm not sure the Giants can beat the Patriots again, you know, and the second time in 4 years.
And I've gotten into many a Twitter argument, especially with one Nick Wright about Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady greatness. And I'm a huge Peyton Manning shill, and I'll admit it. I'm completely biased, but it'll be incredibly
well,
hard.
You guys share the same forehead.
There you go. So I don't know if you I have a blog on 610 Sports Radio, their website.
Yes,
I
you do.
Them, and I the when they asked me
at
to
least
do
until
it, I
today.
Yeah, exactly. When they asked me to do it, I couldn't go into the studio or anything to take a picture. So I took one with my phone and I emailed it to the station manager, and it was apparently a bad angle. So my forehead looks like it's
I'll
about
have to pull it up.
Tall.
Give me a second. I'll pull
and
it up.
It's, and this guy likes to give me many thoughts about it. But I mean, so before we crown Tom Brady. I mean, is that your thought, Tom Brady, best quarterback ever?
I'm probably like you. I mean, I think that Peyton Manning is the best technical, you know, brainy. If I had to start a team, I would want Peyton Manning. But Tom Brady is an amazing talent in the perfect system. And it's for the same reasons that Joe Montana may be the best quarterback of all time, Tom Brady could then be the best quarterback of all time if he wins another Super Bowl. So if he wins this one, it's just hard to argue that he's not the guy, even though I would probably rather build a team around Peyton Manning.
I think it's always dangerous to pick a Super Bowl because of what might, you know, occur if that happens. But you're right. I mean, he could just completely – I think somebody mentioned that he was on the Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks already, and he's certainly going to be head of the line at that point. But I don't know. The Giants, they're on a hell of a roll. Eli looks unstoppable, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, they've got a good team. And, you know, I think Eli is really hitting his stride as an NFL quarterback. And I mean, he's always been nothing much more than Peyton's younger brother and his little brother, and who just can't do it as well. And, you know, I just think Eli is really kind of coming into his own. I don't know that – I mean, even – this is where the NFL is so crazy, and it's how people in the media make money, and it's how, you know, a lot of sports bars stay in business for debates like this. But it's a situation where if Eli wins 3 or 4 Super Bowls, is he better than his brother?
Yeah.
And who would you rather have? And, you know, I'd still rather have Peyton, but, boy, I mean, Eli is a winner. And
what? How can you argue with,
right,
with the rings, you know?
That's the thing. And so, you know, Peyton, I think, has been to, what, 3 Super Bowls and won one, and now Eli.
Just the two.
Okay. And so he's 500. And so Eli has been to this. I mean, if he wins this one, he's 2 for 2, and yeah, that's pretty huge.
Mm-hmm. And everyone keeps bringing up the 07 argument, how similar the years are. And you know, I'm never usually one for all that kind of stuff, because, you know, years are different each to themselves. But, man, it sure does kind of feel like that, though. Patriots just rolling through everything, even though I guess they didn't really roll through last week. But and then the Giants backing into the playoffs and winning with defense. And, man, it does seem quite a bit like it. So, it's interesting.
We'll see if there's a David Tyree catch over his helmet.
That would be Tim Tebow just hating on all of us.
That's right.
So you don't have a pick for the Pro Bowl, AFC, NFC?
No, I sure don't.
Does she even know what time it's on?
No.
What's the spread on that?
The next time I watch it will probably be the first time I watch it.
Yeah, I don't think I
go. Unless the Kansas City Star sends me to the Pro Bowl, I'm probably not going to watch it.
I think you should. You probably send Mellinger. They probably send Mellinger all the time, don't they?
If they send him, I hope his plane.
We've got to ask a Mellinger question, right?
We've got to.
I mean, who's the better writer, you or Sam Mellinger?
Are you kidding? He's barely a decent writer. He's terrible. He's a loathsome brute. He doesn't smell very good either.
We had this question when he was on our show a few weeks ago. Who gets carded more, Sam Mellinger, Rustin Dodd, or I guess we'll throw you because you got kind of a baby face too, but who gets carded more in a bar of the three of you guys?
Well, I think Sam's just got the intelligence of a kid, whereas I think that Rustin and I have the faces of a kid.
Rustin looks like he's 9. I mean, he really looks
young.
Man.
I mean, one of the things with Sam, and we certainly don't have to make this all about him, because the thing I always say about him, and this is true, he's just a big dumb idiot. I mean, like, that's the bottom line. I mean, he's a good writer, certainly a terrific columnist, but really just not very smart.
That's getting tweeted, by the way, like right now.
Well, he knows it. He's at least self-aware that he knows he's a big dumb idiot.
You talk, because I'm tweeting something
Well,
here, bro.
In that case, I think we'll leave on that one.
Is that how we're shutting it down?
Absolutely. Ken Babb, thank you so much. Journalist, Kansas City Star. If you haven't read the explosive article we talked about, please go read it. Read all of Ken's stuff. It's great. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, boys.
Really appreciate it. We are the Royal next week.
Great job, man.
Next week, we're going to have Willie Akins on the show this coming Sunday. So definitely tune in for that. Royal Man Report for the absent Troilson and Mike Engel. I am Jeff Herr.
I am Chris Kamler, and go Royals.
Indeed.
Is the Echo Network.